Hello, and welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast. Beautiful Business is a community for leaders who believe there's a better way of doing business. We believe beautiful businesses are led with purpose by people who care, guided by a clear strategy, and soulfully grown. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Beautiful Business Podcast. My name is Ewan Tsang, part of the Beautiful Business team, and this week I was joined by Neela Matthews, author and founder of Awakening Flow. She's an expert in human unconscious processing. For the last 20 years, she's worked for companies like Yahoo and Sky as a digital behavioral product expert and worked on award-winning products. Neela specializes in unconscious processes, behavioral sciences, neuroscience, intuitive intelligence, and energy to understand the gap between what we say and want, but do and get. Neela, thank you very much for joining us today. I've been looking forward to this chat quite a lot. And let's kick straight off with what we spoke about before, about unlocking your optimal self. I think lots of the listeners, and certainly me, myself, you face each day and you think, how can I get the very best out of myself in order to kind of produce my best work? And sometimes that kind of puts a bit of pressure on yourself as well, which can be kind of counterintuitive. So when we spoke, we came across the term, or we certainly kind of amused ourselves with the term of being a skeptical hippie, which is clearly how I self-identify, because I really want to believe in all of the lovely kind of fluffy things when it comes to looking after yourself. And I very much think that's the hippie side of me coming out. But there's also this skeptical side of me that wants the data, that wants the science and the facts. So when we talk about being optimal self, for you, what does that mean? You know, what's the upside? How do we come about it?
Yeah, thank you for inviting me here, first of all. Optimal. So it's a really big word. And, you know, I'm going to wrap it up with something that it's a term that has followed me all my life, even before I knew of the science behind it, flow. So flow is our optimal state of being and consciousness. What that actually means is that we're not just connected with ourselves. You know, we feel energized. We feel like we're in the, well, I want to say flow, but flow also can be like you could be in a flow, but passively. So you're in that resigned state. You're just going with the flow because actually you're either too scared to say what you feel, or you're just the good girl, good boy that's going along because you don't want to rock the boat. That's not the flow I'm talking about. This is quite an active flow, being in the being. You're meeting that fear. And I'm going to talk about not just the concept, because we can often talk about face fear and do it anyway. No, you've got to face the fear if you know how to put yourself into an optimal flow position. And so what I'm really talking about is being optimal within. It's called interoception. It's all about your nervous system. So recently there's been a lot of talk. Forgive me if you haven't heard it, but it's called vagus nerve. Your vagus nerve is your emotional resilience nerve. And I'm going to talk to that in a moment and what that comprises, because when we have that internal sense of safety, and there's three parts to this, our brain then is allowed to work in the right gear. It's allowed to push itself into, am I being analytical today? Do I need to be creative? Do I need to be in connection? And each one of those states, and even when you're, you know, you're looking for that aha, there's a state that we need to be in terms of brainwave states. It's called gamma. We need to cross into a certain alpha bridge, and there's ways that we can do it. So that whole view of sit at your desk, sweat it out until you've got the answer, isn't going to work. This is all about neurophysiology, and this is what I've been working on, really, because I had to. It's part of my healing journey, because I'm a creative and I need to understand how I worked in order to put myself back together, but also to do my work more effectively. But we do live in a culture which has had this superhero. I'm the superhero, must sit here, must finish this, and that's what we think is optimal. And it's so anti-optimal, you know, taking time to put yourself into a state to answer that problem might look like going for a run. It might look like give energy so energy will give you. Like we started this conversation, Ewan, and you said, I'm feeling a bit low energy. And what I wanted to say was, first thing you want to do is change your energy signature. Maybe do a shake, you know, but you're allowing that dense energy to fall down. So an optimal state for me is higher energy. But actually, at the heart of all this is being in connection, not just with yourself, but with others. I'm going to pause there for a moment, and then I'm going to talk about actually that autonomic nervous system state, because there's a hierarchy. And that first hierarchy is am I? It's not just am I safe, it's am I also in connection? Does the world feel welcoming? And that's to do with your vagus nerve. And then it goes down into sort of play and excite. And when that's not aligned, you're in combat, you're fighting or fleeing and escaping. And when that's not, and then the next layer down is rest and digest when it's fully working, optimal. And when it's not, you're in freeze, you're in collapse, you're in the world feels so dangerous. and there are three states. And that's nothing to do with a happy hippie. That's everything to do with your nervous system. And that's the first thing that needs to be aligned. Am I safe? From the brain's perspective, I'm going to talk about the vagus nerve there. From your brain, then it goes, am I safe? To am I supported? And then it goes to, can I create? What can I learn? How can I, you know, create something in the world?
It's like that, as I said, the hierarchy. And I guess having an awareness of what that hierarchy is, you can identify where you are. And I guess that's one of the first steps that you need to do in order to kind of move yourself from one state to another, is recognizing the state that you are in. I think when we spoke before, we talked about flow. And what immediately came to mind when you described it was, when I was younger, I used to do a bit of mountain biking. And a lot of the bikers used to talk about being in the flow when they're going down these quite scary kind of tracks. And the bike is just kind of, you know, the bike is...
You are the bike.
Yeah. I know it sounds really cheesy and it does, but you end up in this state where you can go faster than you've ever gone before. And all the bumps and the ruts and the branches and everything are still there just as they are for everybody else. But you're able to navigate over them and through them and under them. And you almost go into this state of kind of calmness. And as I say, you're moving faster than you ever have done before, but perhaps it's your brain is more aware of this kind of heightened perception where it almost feels like it's slowed down your movement, your transition from these places. And the mountain bikers, I was going out with, when they said when that happens, it's when you're in the flow. As you say, it's when everything is connected. You have this kind of sense of confidence almost that you can move, that you're all right. And because you feel like you're all right and you can move, you go even faster and you can, you know, handle the bumps and the jumps and everything else even better than you have before. Would you say, is that kind of it? Because I'm wondering from a listener's perspective, that maybe they don't know mountain bike, but I imagine there are similar sort of states when you are snowboarding or skiing, or I guess in that kind of work context where we've all been there before. I must say that I tend to find that I'm more perceptive to it when I'm working in amongst a team. And I think this is what you're talking about in terms of connections with the rest of your team and the people that you kind of work with, and this kind of energy that you give off and perhaps you take from other people as well. But you almost kind of in this collective flow state where you feel like you are unbeatable. You know, you've got an objective, you've got a task, you've got a project. You're absolutely smashing it and everybody is buzzing and everybody's going for it. And this is an amazing state to be in. And I guess, as I say, from a listener's perspective, that for me, when you talk about flow and you get to that point, it's that kind of sensation that you get where you just feel elevated.
That's exactly it. And actually, you've identified the two different states, that collective flow. And what you're actually talking about is, I always refer to it as creative flow, and how we get there in the team environment. And then individually, it became studied by a psychologist called Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. Ancient wisdom have known about it for years. There is so much fMRI studies around it. And that surfer's high, that mountain biker's high. And I'm sure if everyone just took a moment, it's something that we all do, that means that you've reached that flow. You've befriended fear. I'm going to come back to that term, but befriended fear, everything just goes away. It's the same brainwave states that meditators go into. So we are opening up that part of our brain, which just allows every autonomic process just to happen. You know what to do. Your procedural memory has done this before. You're allowing it to just become the wave, become the bike, because you have that almost trust within yourself as well. And what we know also from studies is, from a strategic problem-solving perspective, you can solve problems 500 times more by putting yourself in that state. So when we don't, when we're in stress, your brain's almost like stuck in second gear. It's called high beta in terms of a brainwave state. But from there, all you're seeing is like you're prisoned in your mind, you're stuck in second gear, and whatever you do, you can't seem to get out of there. That carrot and stick approach that we use on ourselves, or as managers, leaders, we use on our staff. And they're not going to be creative. And creativity and flow are related in quite a lot of terms. So I'm jumping a little bit, but the writing I've been doing is about looking at the creative process, that preparation, incubation, illumination and verification. And so that incubation and illumination state is almost like that flow state. And what's intrinsic to both of them is when we cut everything away and ask you to do all of the 8 states, we're asking you to be in your heart and find a place of joy and gratitude. And we can train ourselves to do that, but we all get stuck in that real-time moment of, oh my God, I can't do this. Everything's overwhelming. What do I do? That stress. And there are tools that we can use to re-anchor you back in that moment. Breath work, things that we can use, visualization. Again, a lot of the brain scanning studies that I've seen, looked at, done myself, have looked at those unconscious primes that just allow your brain to just go into the right state. And we're easing that nervous system. But let me just say, it starts with our nervous system, which is, I think it's 34 miles long. It's the storer of all our stress. And we're not talking about just this last week. I'm talking a lifetime long of stress. And so to get ourselves in the flow, often you've got to meet that fear. You've got to recognize the stress and change your energy signature. We've got to recognize that kid in the back called fear, called stress, needs to be released. There are tools.
I just want to take a quick minute to say thanks to our trusted partners, Crystal Hosting. Crystal is a B Corp powered by 100% renewable energy and has a goal of planting 1 billion trees by 2030. Crystal service is super fast and super reliable, and they're genuinely really nice people. We're super picky over who we work with as partners at Beautiful Business, and we're delighted to count Crystal as one of them. Back to the podcast.
I guess the real challenge is that you mentioned it earlier, you know, we're almost kind of like preconditioned to, there's like a machoism, isn't there, in terms of particularly in the corporate and in the work world, where it's almost frowned upon to admit to these things. I think it's changing. It's fair to say that it is changing. There's much more kind of recognition of mental well-being and kind of looking after yourself in that sort of way. There's almost like an internal dialogue, certainly for myself, just speaking very personally, where you just think, you just got to pull your socks up. You just got to get on with it. You got to keep on with keeping on. And I suppose it's that preconditioning of, you just got to work through it. You know, you just got to, you know, push yourself through and keep going. And I guess what you're saying is that we will be forever stuck in this state or unable to kind of escape from it or elevate ourselves out from it if we don't recognize that we have got these kind of pressures, that there is, you know, stress or there is an anxiety or whatever it might be. I guess it is about recognizing it. First of all, it's about, even the word admitting to it feels like it's a negative connotation, but it is that acknowledgement. I think it's acknowledgement. That's probably the better word for us to use in this instance, that these things do affect us. And going back to the science of it, this isn't just a worry or a thought that's kind of going through your head. It manifests physiologically in our bodies, in our nervous system, in the cells of our bodies themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm so passionate about this. Now, I could throw every scientist at you, Bruce Lipton, Dr. Joe Dispenza, looked at all the placebo effects. But the reality is, back in 2015, I want to say, I'd ignored all of this. I was an innovative burnout. And burnout happens in 3 phases. You get cynical, you feel fatigue, you get depressed. Now, I was on my 6th major operation until I finally admitted that I'd been ignoring all of. We think of ourselves as the vessel that we need to get from A to X. So you're going north, whatever that project is, whatever life is, you want your life and legacy. That's the business. If I was the vessel, I had so much unconscious baggage on board that it was energetically dragging me down and I was just ignoring it. I had 2 significant losses. I had unconscious trauma. Now, when I look back, and I work with one-to-one clients now, and I do energy and intuitive methods to get to the bottom of that subconscious blockage, that upper level. And what happened to me was I had 6 major operations and I was done. And when I say done, I was in such a dark place that I wasn't answering phone calls. I was not connecting. I was just, you know, done in the darkest way. I had a young daughter at the time as well. And I remember, this is important, but I remember I got a phone call from my friend who shouted at me on my voicemail, basically saying, pick the phone up, you're not alone, get what you do, get creative, what the hell are you doing? And it was so shocking, I just started laughing. Now, actually, what that allowed me to do was lighten up. It made me not take myself seriously. And now I've been looking at the brain regions that we go in to make a breakthrough, and that laughter, that lightening of what happened, was actually something to help me get a little bit of a breakthrough, to get from that high beta of stress into a brainwave state where I went, oh, actually, I think I can solve this. I think I can get the answer. I think I can help more than anyone else. And that really shifted my trajectory of where it was. But when I look back, at where I got ill in my stomach. So I talked about, I freeze a lot. I was listening to Mila Kunis, the actress, recently, and she said she went for an audition with Beverly Hills 90101 or whatever it was called. And Stephen Priestley was in the room and she froze. She's never frozen. And then she had this pattern of freezing. And actually, how do I stop myself from doing that? And that's what I would do. Then you would collapse, see the world as unwelcoming. You would be done. Or I would be in combat. Oh my God, you know, that kind of, I wasn't in connection. But when I look at how I now address my nervous system in that first instance to go, oh, I'm getting this, I need to do this. And so I can change and talk to my nervous system and put it at that ease. That's why I was so passionate to go looking for answers. And initially I did start very much on the psychology route, the brain scanning studies, all of the traditional, I'm a counselor, I'm a mental health tutor. None of it was working properly because I needed to understand the somatics. Neuroception is how our nervous system is taking in those messages and turning it into a message for our body. Interoception is when I became aware of it, when we become aware of what's going on and we address it. So again, back to the happy hippie, it is because I'm also using tools and methods that ancient wisdom have known for years. Pranayama. Pranayama is your life force breath. That's the first line of defense, you know, and it's that. And, you know, for years we were using this two sides, inhale, outhale. It's now called in the science world as the physiological sigh. It's the one tool that we can use in real time to bring ourselves back into a state of balance. So I offer that as a tool.
That's interesting. So just take a minute to explain to me. It's quite interesting because I'm thinking that there's a couple of things here that's going on when we do this kind of, sorry, what's the scientific name of it? The two-stage sigh.
Yeah. And actually, Andrew Huberman talks about it a lot, but we've been using, I heard him talk about it recently, but I was like, we've been using that for years. And it's something that Stephen Porges is the founder of polyvagal theory and the nervous system and how it works. So that physiological sigh allows your alveoles, I can't pronounce the word, it's like the little capillaries in your air sacs in your chest, they expand up and they're the size of like two tennis courts. And when you breathe in, extended breath out, it's allowing more oxygen into your system and it's allowing you to settle. So that our brain, our heart and our digestive system are all connected. And what that allows you to do is open enough just to give you enough air and also reset some of those elements. So it's called the sympathetic part, which is the hyper alertness or the anger part, the flight and the flee part. And then we go down to the freeze. And I'm going to talk about fawn, which is slightly different, but in that part where our stomach, where we're allowing that diaphragm to actually rise, fill up air, and then our ventral system, which goes from our heart to our eyes and our face, our connection to actually ease. Because what I would normally say is you breathe out longer than you breathe in. So you take a big cleansing breath in for four and out for six. Again, that's calming. But if you're in freeze, that calming doesn't always work because you need more oxygen in. But if you're in that attack mode, definitely four in, six out. And then we vary it. I do a lot of workshops around what kind of nervous system response do you have? What is your normal default? And then how would you view the world? And how do you view you? And how do we get out of each state? And we've got the tools. For me, that's kind of 101 self-care.
It's really interesting because even four in, six out, or that kind of split.
The physiological sigh.
It's super interesting to hear what physiologically happens to your body when you kind of do that and how that kind of moves through your nervous system and how it's all kind of interconnected. There's a story about a French guy that I know who I went to see years and years and years ago, and we're talking about the nervous system, and he said, that's on your intestinal meridian. Are you having stomach problems at the minute? And I basically couldn't handle the cheese, but it blew my mind how connected the body is and how the nervous system kind of runs through. But my point that I was trying to make is that just through the process of kind of controlling your breathing and putting yourself through that, that's almost like a mental reset in itself, right? In that you're thinking, right, okay, I'm not in the right kind of mind state at the minute, or I'm feeling a little bit stressed out, I'm feeling a bit anxious, whatever it might be. I'm going to do some breathing exercises, do the, you know, four in, six out, or the sigh. That's almost a conscious action in itself to try and change your state. Is that right? So it's almost like, as I say, it's that first kind of conscious step to make.
And actually, I think what, if you notice people, so I notice people a lot, this is what I do, but you probably notice that people put their hand on their head or they put their hand on their stomach, or put their hand, that's their unconscious actually saying there's something wrong, because often your system is the first thing that's getting those signs and signals. The conscious mind is the last to catch up. And this was really clear when I did my brain scanning studies. Mm. What I do, and I don't even realize I do it now, is I put my hand on my heart. It's a behavioral cue. You know, like when sometimes when you see an image and you don't know why you act, but you act. It's that Pavlov's dog effect. Mm-hmm. So I've got my dog. I don't know if you can see behind. I've got like a crystal ball thing and I bang it. And then I give my dog a biscuit and he knows he's going to get a treat. I was like, let's just try this. It works. Or he sits. But the thing is, you know, you just need to notice how you're feeling. Are you feeling tight in your stomach? Where do you hold that stress? Do you get a rash? So I was in a job for ages and I knew it was not right. The values didn't align. It was just awful. It was toxic management style because of the pressures they were under. I'm not going to say they were. It was an accumulation. And I had the worst eczema all around my face. I get my hair, I get hair loss. My stomach issues get, my body talks to me. The Body Holds the Score is a great book and definitely true. And this is why I had those operations, because I ignored the signs. And when you get sick, it's almost like, well, we've told you, right, suffer this. Mm. Now you've got your attention. And it's like that child in the back of the car. They're not going to shut up until you pay them attention. What is it you want? Okay, I hear you. Now let's. And it's the same. Notice your physiological signs. So the workshop that we actually do helps you identify what they are, and then we address that. I put my hand on my heart because there's some work, beautiful work done again by the Heart Mass Institute about how important that heart center is to align us, to help us reach flow. Because when we connect to our heart and we are allowing that gratitude and that freedom of those feelings of joy, appreciation, freedom to overcome the fear. Hmm. So we can sit in that for 2 minutes. And I often do when I feel that I'm just bringing images and of joy, appreciation, and letting that expand. It's a 3 minute, we call it the micro method in an institute that I'm with at the moment called the Institute of Intuitive Intelligence. But it's also scientifically proven by the Heart Mass Institute, which also show that your heart is precognitive if you allow it to connect first, and then you allow that flow to happen with your brain, which blew my mind because I was like, well, the subconscious knows before your logical brain does. I saw that clearly. And then I looked at their data and I was like, holy moly, this is exciting.
Yeah.
And it's how do we bring that into our everyday life to make sure we're heart-centered leaders, that we are in connection, that you said at the start, you know, that group energy. How can I make sure my energy is in train to lift people up? Because we are all energy. And when we're at that higher vibing energy, where we're all feeding off of each other, like in a great football match, it's great. But when that energy turns and it's negative, it's energy again, but it's so dense, it's so heavy, and it's deconstructive. It's not constructive. Yeah. So again, I do a lot of talks and masterclasses on how do we entrain our energy? Because that's how we guide other people's consciousness. That's how we get out of our own funk, I want to say, fears, heaviness. You know, give energy will give it back, but make sure it's positive.
That just made me think. I think I'm going to be quite self-conscious now, but you know, I'm one for putting my hand on my head a lot. It's in different instances, well, because sometimes when I'm trying to make my brain work a bit harder and I put my hands to my kind of temple there, not necessarily a negative thing, but it's almost kind of like, right, okay, here we go.
And that movement that you just did, I've got my thumb at the side of my head, I've got my hands there, and you stretch that along there. You're allowing blood to go to that prefrontal cortex. You've done exactly what you need to do unconsciously.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I find myself overwhelmed, I do a figure of eight around my eyes until I yawn. So I'm going to ask you to do that now. And let's just see if you do yawn just while I'm talking, because that's actually bringing your energy back to you.
That's interesting. I haven't yawned yet, but that's probably because I'm making myself not yawn. But the other thing that I found myself doing there, Neela, was just put my hand on my chest just then and about that kind of heart thing. And I think back when I'm hearing stories, and it's normally when it's like, you know, when you hear like really lovely stories, you know, really nice things that have happened or really inspiring things, you're right, my kind of hand just ends up here. And I almost thought it's kind of like, is it just me trying to kind of express sincerity and that I'm kind of listening. Am I right in thinking that in sign language, when you kind of wrote that, that's like thank you or gratitude? When you
thank that, you that's is that, that
or is that please?
But you do put your hand on your heart when you want to say, you know, I love you. So I think it's I love you, but you do touch your hand at heart.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So that again is so kind of interesting, as you know, as you say, that kind of physiological kind of manifestation of these kind of energy in these states.
And I wanted to just actually mention there's a tool called tapping, which I use a lot with my clients. I use for myself daily. And they use it for especially people that have come out of the army and got PTSD. And that's known, and it's got lots of studies around it about it's like acupuncture to your nervous system. And there are specific, you know, you were talking about the rash, and what he said was you are tapping on specific points. And your face, because the ventral vagal, which goes from your heart up to your face, up to your eyes, that's the connection part. We don't necessarily need a hug or to be seen by other people. But if you put your hand on your face, if you're feeling a bit lonely, that is just as good for your nervous system. But the tapping part is actually also activating parts in your face to actually allow you to do that. And that thing about fear, I will meet my fear. I'm feeling a bit rubbish today, feeling tired. I'm feeling really rubbish. And then you go through because you're naming what you're fearing. And then you're gonna halfway through, I would go, what if? But what I haven't done is been stuck in that energy. I've given voice to it. I've allowed myself to see it, and then we change the energy around it. So I would spend about an hour doing this with some clients, but the tapping, even if you didn't have any words or didn't know what to do, tapping at the side of your hand, the top of your eyebrow, just allows you to start shifting some of that dense energy. The simple somatic tools, we are addressing the nervous system. And these sort of things, you know, when I went back to Sky recently and I was working, they've got a meditation room. When I was stuck, they were like, where's Neela? Oh, she's in the meditation room. And then I'd come back and have a great, you know, I had a breakthrough. I'd go to the gym. Where is she? My husband's laughing. Oh my gosh, she's meditating again. And then I have a breakthrough. So I'm going to be really unapologetic about the fact that I'm in counterculture and people don't understand that I'm actually working, but I'm allowing my nervous system and my subconscious to come up with the answers. I'm not going to just stick at my desk and get frustrated.
Yeah. Again, it's that, you know, the precondition that we have in the workplace. And again, I'm really positive that it's changing, perhaps not as fast, but to your point, if you are at your optimal self, you can be as productive, if not more productive, but still kind of protect yourself and give yourself that kind of longevity to do this for weeks or months and carry on. Whereas, you know, somebody who's not conscious of the states that they're in and the energies that they are working within, and if it's that kind of dense energy, as you say, or if it's a destructive kind of energy in terms of what you're giving off, then perhaps that, you know, they may well be as productive, but it's not sustainable and it's a painful productivity almost.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about human sustainable living, performance, creativity. I'm really glad you mentioned that, because in the book, and I've talked about this again, there's a myth of the work-life balance because it needs to be sustainable. And that's the point about meeting and releasing those fears. And, you know, it's not being masculine to hold on to it. One of my recent clients actually spent years and years and years and years and years of stuff that had happened, because life happens and your nervous system's accumulating it. It's like when you're young and you've got stress response, it might be the size of a mouse and we have homeostasis. We need to balance it out. So our body finds a way to get homeostasis. But as we get older and we're not releasing or seeing that, imagine that stress response from a mouse to a dog, to a giraffe, to an elephant. Now you need a huge response. And this is where it hits your nervous system. And a reality call is I've just finished a spiritual directorship course, which was 18 months. It was a business and spiritual directorship course. And I've been with her for 3 years. She was a leadership expert working with the top CEOs around the world. She had a heart attack at 38. She's an ex-dancer. She was fit. And she thought she looked after herself, not as an and or, but an and both. But she was not addressing her stress. So she had that heart attack. Women's heart attacks are different. She sat in that meeting and finished it and then went and found response. You know, I've seen a heart attack. It's horrible. But men tend to have more of that dramatic ER kind of moment. But women's can be more subtle. So again, being aware of what is your subtle signs. What is your body going to tell you if you haven't dealt with that stress? And it could be Work stress or life stress, and seriously, your nervous system doesn't care. It's a stressor. And it's also in anticipation. Did you go into a meeting thinking it was going to go bad? One, you've set the energy wrong already, but two, your nervous system's already, not safe. So remember, the hierarchy is, am I safe? Am I supported? What can I learn and create? And as a manager, are you putting your staff, or as an entrepreneur in your team, is your staff feeling safe? Do they feel supported? You know, then what can they learn and create together? So understanding that for yourself, being the demonstration of that, means that the energy you ripple around you is going to be at a higher vibration and not at lower. So you go into your brainstorming meeting and, you know, you're all vibing against each other, and that's brilliant. But if we're not conscious of that, then it's all. So if nothing else, remember, be conscious of your energy. What does that energy signature say to you? And what does it say to everyone else? Because everyone else will feel it, even if you don't want to air it.
Thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode of the Beautiful Business Podcast. Really hope you enjoyed listening to it. And a big thank you to Neela Matthews for sharing her advice, her stories and experience.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Beautiful Business Podcast. Beautiful Business is a community for leaders who believe there's a better way to do business. Join us next time for more interesting discussions on how businesses can bring about change, helping communities, building a fairer society, and safeguarding the planet. You can also join in the discussion at www.beautifulbusiness.uk.